Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia, and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Bryce and I give you stuff about property, money, and finance. Mate, welcome to the couch.
Thanks for having me on the couch, mate. If only the listeners knew that was take number six. That was take number six. But
I thought it was take number 10, but anyway, there you go.
Yep, so today's roll reversal.
There we go.
That's actually true.
It's infectious, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's okay. A roll reversal.
What do I start with? Normally mindset minute or my motivational moment. Or what's it called? Me motivational minute. Life hack.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
I got it.
It's all good.
I just do this because you should see how I've seen this building. She just gets so upset with
me. She gets uptight.
Anyway,
she's demanding blue M&Ms in a trailer now that she's done the opening.
Yeah, exactly.
On the 150th.
my mindset minute, Bryce.
Is what?
This is the time of the year that you should take a minute just to think about how fortunate you are.
Mm.
Just to think of all the joys and the positive things that are happening in your life, and to look forward rather than backwards in terms of what 2018 may bring you. So take a minute, a mindset minute, to be grateful for all that you have and all of your potential of what you're going to have tomorrow.
No, that's good. That's the gratitude project. The happiest people in the world are the people that are the most grateful.
So, I agree.
Man, I like that.
That's good.
Hey, I just want to know an observation.
Sure.
This role reversal, you're seeming more intelligent today. And I don't know if there's any link.
Well, I've always wanted to be as smart as you are.
Now it's coming back over the net, isn't it?
Well, I like that, dude. Well, I've got to concentrate, don't I? I mean, I'm actually, I'm producing, I'm leading the show today. Well, not really. You're about to take over.
All I can say to the listeners is hang around for the Did You Know, because I've got some Did You Know about the season.
About the season.
Because I'm doing Did You Know, and you've got a wonderful life hack.
I do.
Coming up.
Which I've just totally forgotten about, so I'm just going to have to think about it again.
We'll give you some time. There's a bit of time. But today we want to talk about a little message we got from someone who's gone and got straight to the website, Ben.
Yep.
And they've actually asked a question. And it's around doomsday.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So yep. Let's just have a little listen.
Hi, Bryce and Ben. My name's Saxon. I'm a long-time listener from Singapore. I wanted to ask you about an article that was published this week by Matt Barry, the CEO of Freelancer.com in Australia, where he painted a very bleak and negative picture about Australia's future prospects and described the property market as a bubble built upon a bubble built upon a bubble, namely mining, and I think you said immigration. Anyway, long article. Would love to hear your negation of some of his gloomy outlook and why property is still a good bet moving forward.
Saxon, great question. Thank you for that. And, just to quote the article, we'll put that somewhere in the show notes, Ivis, mm-hmm. won't we? He said, I'll tell you exactly, Ben, what that bubble looked like.
Oh, yes,
as a whole, this quote, as a whole, the Australian economy has grown through a property bubble, inflating on top of a mining bubble, built on top of a commodities bubble, driven by a China bubble.
Yeah, I remember reading that. Yes.
So, unfortunately for Australia, that lucky free ride is just about to end. So, of course, it goes on, but largely what we want to chat about today, Ben, is the doomsday scenario,
mm-hmm.
the Armageddon that's about to hit Australia, according to the overseas economists who've predicted 27 of the last two recessions.
27 of the last two?
Did that land?
I like that. Yeah.
And it clearly comes up, and a lot of international people like to talk about it. So we thought that we'd riff around this.
I agree. I mean, ultimately, this is about mindset. And when we talk about bubbles, what we're basically really talking about is do we see value in something?
Mm.
And sometimes, the whole system of money and of wealth in a technical sense is built on one thing, Bryce, and that is trust.
Mm-hmm.
So we trust in that our currency in terms of how we change barter is built on a trust principle. That piece of plastic that you're about to hand me that has a $50 note on it, $50 value on it, mm-hmm. Is worth that. So $50 value, how about just 50?
Yep.
You know, so it's plastic. Now that thing in a sense is, it's not worth $50 to produce. Mm-hmm. It's just plastic, but mm-hmm. it holds a value because we trust in that value.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about the whole economic, you know, and value piece, it's all based on this principle of trust. And so when you move through understand the economics, how a bubble is created is through this concept of, you know, irrational exuberation.
Or you know, exuberance.
Exuberance. So from that point of view, what we need to make sure is we need to understand that because, you know, I want you to tell us about the tulip story because I think it's a ripper,
mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of building into that. So what is happening is that people are trusting in a value and let's...
Yeah, well, for those of you familiar with tulip mania, Ben, it was the 16th century, I'm pretty sure, back in...
I believe so.
In the Dutch... what's Dutch? Amsterdam? Was it...
Holland.
In the Netherlands.
Yep.
And there was a very specific type of tulip that had like a bleed through it, but it was highly desirable. And it could only be grown at a certain period of time throughout the year. So that created a supply constraint.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened is the demand started to fuel the price of tulips to where it went well beyond what the intrinsic value of the tulip ended up being. And of course, it came to an end. So that's, you know, a bubble that's existed through history. So that's clearly what we want to avoid in the market that we operate in. But I would argue that we're nowhere near that.
No, well, ultimately, it's a judgment call.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, so any type of bubble or correction in the marketplace is a judgment call that's being made by more often than not the majority of the people who were observed a market previously. And so that's why human interest, human behavior is really important. There's a great cartoon that talks about, you know, sort of something that's going to excel, and then someone else hears that message and it's like, sell, excel, sell, 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 and all sort of go, and everyone's like, sell, 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 you know, and then someone says, oh, I'm over this.
Goodbye.
You know, goodbye, and it's like, goodbye, goodbye, bye, 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 bye.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, and that is a great indication of sentiment
mm-hmm.
And understanding that. And it's, you know, in terms of, you know, building value in a society and giving this trust component in terms of whether it's got intrinsic value is all based on that. So, you know, one of your podcasts we did a couple of weeks ago, Bryce, I remember you talking about, you know, you're saying that if you believe in one thing, it's true. And if you believe in another thing, it's true as well.
You're right.
Yeah, either way, you're right. So if the vast majority were to believe in this story, then it would be a bubble because
mm-hmm.
ultimately we would all abandon it and we'd all get out of that particular product, whatever mm-hmm. it may be. And obviously in the 16th century, that was tulips.
Mm-hmm.
So we could create a bubble, absolutely, if we all just decided that we don't trust in the price point of the assets. And, you know, what this particular article was focusing on was putting a case for a correction all based on these principles. Now, you know, in reading through it, there were some areas that you could put a counter argument to.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ones for me was around unemployment. He goes on to talk about unemployment being, you know, deteriorating and we're, you know, soft unemployment. Well, actually, the November employment numbers were terrific. In fact, we're almost near full employment in the economy. So, you know, you've got to take these types of conversations seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to give them merit, and hence obviously we had, you know, someone reach out to us around that, but we've got to put it into context in terms of, well, what are the fundamentals or the arguments on the other side? Because if we don't hear a balanced argument, how are we going to form an opinion?
You haven't checked all sides of the risk.
Yeah.
I mean, we get a lot of clients who reach out to us and say, hey, look, these headlines make us nervous.
Mm.
So today is really about sending a message to all of our listeners, but we've got clients who listen to the Property Couch.
Sure.
Just to reassure them of some of the things. One of my mates is a financial planner. He sent me a report recently and talked about the four banks, the four pillar banks.
Yep, our big four.
And what their average LVR is on their loan book.
Mm.
ANZ, 51%. CBA, 50%, NAB, 45%, and Westpac, 42%. So even if you have a perfect storm, and the article goes on to talk about it, even if you have a perfect storm where the market drops 35%, they're still on average not necessarily in a major default, which will have a major impact on their profits, which will ultimately crash the prices. And it also talks about the fact that Australians have this, which Americans don't, they have this huge incentive not to default. So in America, you know, they use the GFC as the example. They had an average LVR of the banks, according to the report, of 70% plus, right? Mm. So quite different to us. So any drop in prices obviously has a bigger impact on them. But they have non-recourse lending. So hence the term jingle mail through the GFC. When the person who owns the house goes, I can't afford to have the house, I'll move out, put the keys in the mail, send it to the bank, and then on Mondays the mail started jingling, right? Australians can't do that because we've got recourse lending. So if there's any shortfall, the borrower still has to make that up, and the only way they can get around that is through bankruptcy, which is a huge disincentive.
Totally.
So ultimately, whenever, you know, whenever there's noise, go to the facts. And if you have a look at the facts, which they run through, is that any major downturn in the property market, like a severe downturn, still wouldn't necessarily mean that the share price of the banks will crash. And the question is, what is the agenda behind the international experts coming into Australia and making these recommendations about our market collapsing? And this is just my thought, Ben and I, we've had a chat about this. Most people know that they can buy something first and sell it later, and the sophisticated investor knows they can sell first and buy later. It's called short selling. So, and you can make more money when the market goes down because it happens quicker. And so if you sell at a price, call it a dollar, and it drops to 50 cents, you make a 50 cent margin. Now, some of these commentators overseas, there may be, I don't know, but there may be an incentive where they know how to short sell the bank stocks so that if our market did crash, well, then they could make a lot of money in a hurry. So the question that you've got to ask is, who does the person work for making these predictions? And what is the incentive for them saying that? Because ultimately, I think our biggest risk that we have in this country is if we stop importing people. Because if we stop the population growth story, that's the biggest risk to the property market.
Yeah, and so there's a couple of things I want to pick up because I think you made some really great points. In regards to those banks and their LVRs, that's not including all unencumbered properties.
Correct.
So what you're talking about is that's the properties that they've got mortgages against. If we actually look at the CoreLogic data, which is a broader spectrum of data, it's around 25%. Loan-to-value ratio against the valuation of properties. Now, of course, that could move if valuations come off 5 or 10%. And we've made absolutely no secret of the fact that even when you look at the fundamentals of demand and supply, if you have irrational exuberance around purchasing properties, we can push the values beyond what would be their fair value.
Yep.
Okay, and that's a bit of the argument going on now. And we've talked about this rising tide lifting all ships, and we'll get into historically low interest rates in a minute. Mm-hmm. But it's worth pointing that out. Now, we've also talked about, and you know, don't get me wrong, equities play an important role. And remember, you're not buying equities, you're buying businesses. There are businesses that are doing exceptionally well in around the world, delivering market share and profits to their investors, their shareholders. So don't ever talk about equities, just talk about the businesses. But the problem with it is because you've got a live and liquid market, and because these days on a lot of the equity markets, there's a lot of machine trading, meaning that there are smart systems that are doing calculations and using algorithms to make buy-sell recommendations in real time. And we're talking literally high-volume transacting. Mm-hmm. Now, when it's human nature, if you're seeing a value of a stock plummet, you don't want to sit back and say, oh, they're being silly. You just want to get on that bandwagon and get out. And that's how you can get that extension. Now, the thing with property, residential property, is transactions are slow. So you can bring potentially common sense in to a marketplace.
On top of it being an essential need.
Yeah, on top of it being shelter. So that's, I suppose, a little bit of an insurance policy. There's still risk. I mean, it could still happen. People, you know, dance in the street till they died in the 15th century, and no one knows why they did that. you know, for a month and killed themselves. I mean, you know, humans are strange creatures.
Breakdancing.
And if we all believed, or if the fundamental trust in the system, could have been breakdancing, if the fundamental in the system breaks down, you know, we saw it in Argentina when, you know, effectively their whole financial service system collapsed. And that, you know, had a contagion effect on their broader economy. Property prices completely collapsed where they should never have been. Now, you know, they've since recovered, but you could buy beautiful, you know, sort of homes and apartments and condos closer into the city. That's all sort of changed around over the journey. So it's still a risk. And I'll finish off with, you know, part of the international commentary is, you know, risk agencies such as Moody's and that type of thing, they are analysing the risk of China and those types of things all the time. And it's important to understand that they place a risk of a complete collapse of the Chinese market at around 5 to 10%. So that's a real risk. And you know, if you read the article, and we'll, as I said, we'll get a link to it because we want you to be informed. We want you to understand that this does pose a risk, and we said it all along, that you need to follow that story, but look at the balanced part of the story. So take a deep breath and don't panic. Because, you know, in some respects, this is how we wage war. This is how we do things in human society. We use propaganda. We use messages. We use storytelling to get beliefs. I mean, religion is based on beliefs. There's no technical evidence that, you know, is well documented anywhere around some of those beliefs, but we just believe. So, you know, we've got trust in what our belief systems are. So if those belief systems are challenged and we all believe in that, then it could be a self-fulfilling prophecy that we could have a major collapse in the market.
Agreed. So the thing is, there's a couple of things that we still, like I said before, if we stop importing people, that's a challenge because we still have an increasing need for houses. But I think the important thing for people to remember is the Reserve Bank has been conscious of the B word, the triple B word, I was bubble. So they've been putting macroprudential measures in place to put a handbrake on the market, and it seems to be working because you've got investor lending decreasing. It's more difficult to structure lending over 80%. It's more difficult to get it LVRs over 90%. Interest only is for under 80%. So those things are anecdotally actually working in the marketplace. So the idea that we still have, you know, supply is the enemy of capital growth. Well, we've still got more demand than supply, given the fact that, particularly in, you know, Melbourne and Sydney, but around the country, we're expecting increased population. So I think the idea that we are going to crash is not based in fact. It's based in what you talked about. And what do you call it?
Exuberance? Irrational exuberance.
Yeah. Because that's how it could
happen. You become irrational. Yeah. And FOMO played into that, like fear of missing out and that rising tide lifting all ships in the outer suburbs. We still challenge some of those price points in particular markets. And I do expect the media story around Sydney to be corrections of 5 or 10%. I'm not afraid of that story, but I'm not buying the whole marketplace. I'm buying properties within that market. So the question then is, you know, and we've always been about long-term investing in terms of short-term speculation. So, you know, that's why we still look at fundamentals. Short-term supply and demand can show areas where there's immediate growth. And if you want to equity harvest quickly and grow a portfolio in an aggressive manner, that's the risk you're taking. There's the risk-reward piece in that. Longer-term investing, we think, come back to the fundamentals of status, human behavior, living and lifestyle, all of those types of things. And that's that is a real important message to get people out there. Now, I think the other thing we also need to focus in on, Bryce, in around this whole doomsday piece and that particular article was very thorough and, you know, supported by graphs and quotes and research. So good argument. And economics is about arguing points, isn't it? You know, it's about understanding theories and processes and practices. It's a science, you know, in terms of, you know, how you try and put it all together. So in one camp, we've got these people who are believing that the global economy is slowing. And in other camps, we're actually thinking that the economies of the world are actually moving forward. We're seeing the US numbers looking fantastic. We're also seeing, well, fantastic, growingly stronger. Europe is also really coming out of, you know, its dark ages of the post-GFC. And we're now starting to see, you know, big top 20 nations, broader economies all in growth, you know, which is a good story. Now, that wasn't illustrated in there. There was a lot of elements of, no, we're still, you know, we've still got all this legacy of all this debt. Well, the whole idea of, you know, quantitative easing is, yeah, you are absolutely printing money. You are absolutely trying to get other banks and put liquidity into the market. So it's a different lever than just monetary policy and fiscal policy. It's just another way in which we can try and get liquidity. But what it does do is it underscores the value of assets. And this is the link into interest rates. This was absolutely manufactured by the global regulators and you know, sort of RBAs of this world, the governors, all the different banks that are responsible for their nation's banking. You know, the Bank of England, obviously the RBA here, you know, you've got the Treasury and, you know, Janet Yellen over in the States. All of that was absolutely manufactured to keep the price of assets higher.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you had a contagion of all asset values collapsing, then you've got Armageddon. So when you bring in historically low interest rates at a time of emergency measures, you do hold asset values higher. You risk, and the challenge is you don't want them to overextend themselves. But it was a pre-orchestrated move by all the world banks and, you know, the monetary fund and all that to try and do that. An aggressive one. Has it gone on for too long? You know, Alan Kohler believes it has, and, you know, he said that on one of our podcasts earlier. I don't disagree, but I suspect is that better than a hard landing where complete collapsing of asset values and, you know, we go into deflationary environments? And I don't know. I mean, and we will never know, you know, because again, it's that classic case. If we believe it's worse than it is, it'll get worse. And if we believe we're through the woods, then hopefully we'll start to invest and believe we're through the woods, which is what the RBA is also saying about. We want businesses to invest in business because that's the early signs of confidence. Confidence, sentiment moves, moves. Everyone gets employed and we see that come through an economy.
And bubbles, you know, largely a easy access to credit. Arguably, we haven't got easy access to credit. You know, high unemployment. Arguably, we don't have high unemployment. So we have underemployment. So a lot of the conditions that precede those bubbles aren't here. So I think in conclusion, we're saying, obviously, it's not something that you just belligerently ignore.
No.
But we're not of the view that the facts suggest the LVR of the market overall, the LVR exposure to the banks, population growth still being strong in this country, it being an essential need.
Employment's good, inflation's in check. You know,
global marketplace attracting global talent.
Yep, share markets are holding okay. Probably a little bit of exuberance in the US in terms of the markets over there. But broadly speaking, we should feel confident. And if we all remain in that safe and happy space. Oh, look, is household debt too high? Yeah.
It is.
You know, are people spending money where they shouldn't be? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But is that broad across the market? I don't like these analogies of household income or debt to income ratios and all of that, because, you know, different markets have different opportunities. I mean, you and I see some clients with hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of income, some clients with maybe household income of $80,000 to $120,000. So the reality is, and we know where those hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people income live, and we know where they don't live. So I think data will tell us a better story at the more granular level as, you know, digital economies and all of that start to move forward. We'll get more and more data around suburbs as opposed to every 5 years that we get it through the ABS. But right now, I think the conclusion is be watchful. And if I could sneak a little bit of upside in this, there will be some corrections in some markets. We absolutely know that.
Absolutely.
We've said winter's coming and it'll come. And it's starting to arrive in some parts of Sydney. Great buying opportunities.
Great buying opportunities.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't know how many winters you've been through, Ben.
Yes.
Summer always comes back.
Yeah. That's a great point. We've been doing this long enough to see those cycles. So if you're investing for the long term, okay, and, you know, if there's still population growth, and guess what? Most of those immigrants have to, they don't normally buy the moment they arrive. Like they don't get off the plane at Taylor Marine, go out and buy a house. They go and rent somewhere. So from that point of view, you've usually got that passive income that's coming through in the rental income as well.
So the facts remain, you buy for the long term, you correctly finance the property and you buy the right assets and you buy only when cash flows allow. These headlines are going to come and go and, for the next 20 years.
Tell others we're okay. Because if everyone starts to believe we're okay, we're okay. If everyone adopts the sentiment and the media story that will come into the new year again, well, guess what? We could, again, deliver our own, you know, doomsday story or our own correction because we all believe that story. So start to get a balanced conversation out there and listening to those conversations will bode well for the broader economy.
Hear, hear. So, folks, hopefully that's helped. Wherever you are, you might be in between watching the cricket. You might be in a campsite, Ben, spending time with the family, wherever you are after this post-Christmas period. A, we hope you had a great Christmas and festive season.
Absolutely.
And obviously, you've got some good plans coming up for next week for the new year. But ultimately, Ben, 2017 was a good year for people who bought with those fundamentals in mind.
Correct.
Long-term, correctly financed, and they bought the right assets. But I've been waiting all episode for this next bit. What's your life hack?
My life hack, Bryce, and I'm telling you, I'm going to revolutionise how you manage your garbage at home.
Okay.
You all ready right. for this?
You want me to
just come to me.
Okay.
Just as you were wrapping up then, I realised I had to do something. I really didn't have any. Just came to me. So you know you got your recycle bin, right? You got your recycle bin and you've got your normal waste bin. And you normally put a plastic bag in each of those.
What's a plastic bag?
A plastic bag.
Okay, yep.
A plastic bag. He's good, isn't he? Just every time, obviously, gets me. Right, so I don't know whether you do this, and hopefully most households do, but you should always put the fresh plastic bag in the recycle one, right? So you put your recycle things, and you, for those people who don't realize, you can have waste on your recycled plastics. You don't have to wash them out, make them all clean to put in the bin. All right, there's a process that they do. A lot of people think that you can't have food waste in it.
Life hack,
you absolutely. There's so two life hacks. I'll just bang that in there. So don't wash them out, make them clean to put them in the bin. You know, you're wasting water or doing all that other thing. So that, but there will be coffee cups and a few other things that go in there in terms of, you know, recyclables, and so. That bin liner, okay, so the bin liner we're talking about there, right, doesn't get thrown out with the recycle. I see too many people actually putting their recycles in a plastic bag.
Right, yeah.
The plastic bag is not recyclable. So you move that bin liner from recyclable.
Oh, I see where you're going.
And you change that over. So that rotates. And you just change your recycle bin.
I didn't know where this was going. I thought,
did you like that?
I actually do.
Yeah. So
but I thought early days. I thought this might be a weak one. Because what you've recovered.
What happens is people. Yeah, they just. So it goes from goes from a clean liner to obviously a little bit dirty because it has a. And then, but you obviously recycle the liner over to the true waste bin. You keep those bins moving and you get a little bit of efficiency. And
probably
a little...
the investor of the year, Ivis, and also the life hacker of the year. You've waited all year for that.
Hey? I've got more like that. I just didn't realise people wanted to worry about this stuff.
At 51, hey?
No, we're not swapping next year,
that's a good idea. That is a terrific idea. For the listeners who didn't see that,
alternate. Well, get them to vote. Do you want us to alternate or do you want to stay on the Did You Know?
There we go. Obviously, we'll put that up on socials. We'll do a poll.
We'll run a survey.
We'll put a poll up on Facebook. Do we want to swap for 2018?
And I'm for the no. So you got my vote for
and
the
I'm
no.
for the yes. Because then I can just research the. Actually, that's a terrific idea. Can the poll is done.
No, it's not. No,
so
we'll do
a poll. There you go. All right. Did you know, mate, is we're obviously in the shadows of Boxing Day.
Yes.
And I thought, why do we call it Boxing Day? So I did a little bit of research on this, Ben.
Oh, good.
It's celebrated on the...
Where's the research? Dr. Google?
No, mate, this is well in advance. I've chatted to people. I've been in the Market Square. Right, I've been...
been to the Market Square.
I've been talking to...
Kissed under the, mistletoe.
Under the mistletoe, This is just where I've been, mate. I've been out and about.
Just with snow boots on? That image is somewhere else.
Northern Hemisphere. So it's obviously celebrated on the 26th each year. Generally, in those places that are settled by the British Commonwealth, right? Generally. Not exclusively, but generally. And it's believed that it originated because the servants of wealthy families typically had to work on Christmas Day. Okay, makes sense so far, Rob?
Yeah, it does make sense.
So for their services, they were usually presented with gift boxes at the end of Christmas Day.
Yep.
And they were allowed to take the next day off work to spend with their own families.
I like that. It's possible. That makes sense. There's a logical argument there.
So here's some sort of interesting facts, if you like.
Sure.
The Christmas boxes given to servants in Britain on Boxing Day often contain gifts or leftover food from the family's Christmas feast.
Okay.
So there you go.
That's the origins of.
So my question to you,
Boxing Day, yeah?
Is, did you know?
No, I did not know that, Bryce.
All right. Ives, did you know? No, shaking your head.
Shaking your head. Yeah, and you even got a clap.
Well, got a
from
clap.
From Ives.
Yeah. She clapped your life hack to spot.
Did she? Oh, she was happy with that as well.
So, there we go.
That's great. All fantastic. Right. So, until next week,
I was wondering if you... I was looking at you for
the reverse. Well, if I'm hosting, then we get until next week.
Perfect. Mate, Ben. Knowledge is empowering. But only if you act on it.
Oh, couldn't have said it.
Couldn't have said it myself.
Oh, I couldn't even say it myself.
See you next week, folks. Yeah.